The following is a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.
What's in the GES bookstore? Find out on today's episode of Grace in Focus. Hi, I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society. Happy Thursday to you. Hope that you're having a good one. Today, we are talking about what's in the GES bookstore. GES stands for the Grace Evangelical Society, and you may not have known this, but we publish books. You can find those books by going to faithalone.org. And if you'd like to hear about two of them, then you have tuned in on a good day, because we're talking today about a book called Secure and Sure. And then also we're going to discuss a book called The Road to Reward. I got the opportunity to sit down with Dr. Bob Wilkin recently, and we talked about these two books. I want to share that conversation with you right now here on Grace in Focus.
I want to talk about two of your books on today's episode. I want to talk about Secure and Sure, and then I want to talk about The Road to Reward. To start with, Secure and Sure has a pretty clear mission as far as I see it. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about what did you see as kind of the mission statement of this book? What were you trying to accomplish?
Well, the issue of assurance has been a big one my whole life. I came out of a home that was not very religious. My mother was Serbian Orthodox, but she just basically went to weddings and funerals and a parostos, which is kind of memorial service.
Okay.
Or she would go to a slava, a Krsnu slava, which is a saint's day. But she didn't go for general services. And on my dad's side, he had grown up Episcopalian and then Baptist. And then United Methodist.
Was he very devout? Or
no. I think he came to faith maybe when he was a Baptist in his teen years, but then he went to the pastor and he said, I'm not going to walk with Christ now. I'm going to go out in the world.
Wow.
So I don't want to be a hypocrite, so I'm just going to leave the church. So I don't know if my dad was born again or not, but it's possible. My mother might have come to faith at the end of her life or maybe early on. I don't know about either one. But I went to the Methodist Church with my dad, but the pastor did not believe in life after death.
Wow.
There was no heaven, no hell.
How did those sermons go?
They were interesting, but he was an intellectual. I think he went to Harvey Mudd or whatever, the Claremont group, Harvey Mudd complex in Pomona or whatever. Heaven was here on earth, hell was here on earth, things like that. So those influences were not the major influence. When I was six, my parents enrolled me in a boys' club.
Yeah.
It was a sinless perfection holiness group, and it taught that you had to go forward and give your life to Christ sometime between the ages of 5 and 20, and you couldn't just go any Sunday. It had to be when the Lord was calling you.
Okay.
And you would know, and you would go forward, and you would get saved. And then if you got saved, you had to live a sinless life, because if you committed one sin, you lost it and couldn't get it back.
My goodness. So did that just produce just a lack of assurance?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I remember in junior high, I was in ninth grade, and I was walking across campus, and I said, Lord, make me a zombie so that I can obey you perfectly.
Wow.
And
did that happen?
You don't look
like, I mean, you look good. You don't seem like a zombie.
It didn't happen. Ask Sharon. Then I went all through high school and my first 2 years in college scared to death I was going to hell. My senior year in college, at the beginning, a friend came to me from the group, this cult group, and he said, is it possible your view of the gospel is wrong? And he had come to faith through Campus Crusade for Christ.
So that's a pretty pivotal question there.
It was.
Wow.
So I prayed about it, and I decided, okay, he invited me to a Campus Crusade meeting at his school, University of Southern California. So I went. I heard some people talking about the grace of God, and it was a novel idea to me.
So had you never heard those terms?
I'd heard the word grace, but not the way they were explaining it. I mean, it sounded like if you just believed in Jesus, you were saved forever.
Well, that sounds ridiculous.
Yeah, I know. So, in fact, afterwards, one guy lit up a cigarette and another guy said a cuss word. And both of these guys were supposedly Christians involved with Campus Crusade.
Wow.
And I said to my friend John, those people can't be saved because we know anybody who smokes is going to hell and anybody that cusses is going to hell.
How did he respond to
that? He said, you know, maybe there's a difference in what it takes to become a Christian, which is faith in Christ, and Christian growth.
Wow.
And I was like, what do you mean Christian growth? If we start out perfect and stay perfect, how do you grow?
Oh, wow. I see. I didn't even think of that. So in sinless perfectionism, they consider themselves to not need to grow at all?
Right. You start out perfect. Now, I suppose maybe they would say, you grow in making wiser decisions so that you're better glorifying God, but you're still never sinning.
So you could technically have somebody walk the aisle at 5 or 6 and then they could tell their parents, I'm perfect, so you don't need to discipline anymore.
I mean, but anyway, that led me to get the phone number for Campus Crusade for Christ at my school, UC Irvine. They put me in touch with a guy named Bob Gray, who in turn gave me the phone number for Warren Wilkie. And I called Warren up. Warren met with me 5 times over the course of about a week. And each time he kept stressing, by grace you've been saved through faith, and that not of yourselves, it's the gift of God, not of works, lest anyone should boast. Ephesians 2:8-9. And he would probably mention that 10 times every time we got together. So by the last time I'd heard it 50 times and I was finally like, you know what? I don't know what all these other verses mean, but I know what that one means, and I believe it. I'm convinced. And so I gained assurance at that point.
Okay.
And that was September of 72, so that's 50 years ago, almost to the month when this will air. You know, the thing is, I haven't lacked assurance since because I don't look to my works for assurance.
Yeah.
And so that's why I wrote Secure and Sure, is because it's so crucial to me. Plus, when I was at Dallas Seminary, I remember my first semester, I had some student coming to me saying he was doubting his salvation because of what he was hearing in the prolegomena course.
What is prolegomena?
Oh, prolegomena basically means introductory matters related to theology.
Okay.
But I remember telling my friend, well, why are you looking to your works for assurance? Yeah. I don't care what the prof said. He's wrong.
Wow.
Just believe the Bible. Don't be misled by a professor, no matter how well-intentioned. And that's one of the first times when I realized even somebody who had been sharing their faith for years could get confused if someone with some sophisticated arguments came to them and confused them.
I mean, do you think that that's happening a lot in seminaries where somebody shows up, they listen to the prof, and they start losing their grasp on their assurance?
Oh, absolutely. I was doing a discipleship group at Dallas Seminary, actually 3 of them in 2000, and I think it was 5. And there were 3 different groups. A lot of them were first-year students. And I was hearing reports from 3 different sections of a course on research methods. It was a 1-hour course on research methods. The professor was a doctoral student. And he said, one of the things you need to get early on in your training here is to recognize we don't know anything for sure. That's the key to theological research. So students started raising their hands. What about knowing that God exists? He said, well, we're confident of that, but we don't know it for sure. What about Jesus rose bodily from the dead? Well, we weren't there. We're confident of that, but we don't know it for sure. And whatever they would say, I'm going to go to heaven.
What does that accomplish? How does that help anybody?
It didn't help them. In fact, the guy later in a later class said it took him a couple of years to really come to grips with this because for a while he was suicidal.
Wow.
And I thought, boy, that's a real encouragement for people to adopt a postmodern viewpoint that we don't know anything for sure. It was a sad thing. And so I wrote this book, and basically I did what Zane Hodges did in The Gospel Under Siege and Grace and Eclipse and The Hungry Inherit. And I went through various passages that promote assurance, and then I went over obstacles to assurance and objections that people have. Because a lot of people think it's actually a bad thing to be sure.
Yeah, it's almost like it's prideful, or, I mean, I've heard that
they
before.
They call it presumptuous, and they also think it promotes sin because they think, well, obviously, if you were sure of your eternal destiny, you'd go out
and live like
the devil, right? Of course, that's malarkey. When I, as a senior in college, became sure of my eternal destiny, all of a sudden, I wanted to tell everybody.
Yeah.
I wanted to serve Christ for the rest of my life.
Yeah. My take on that has been, when people say that, because I do hear that occasionally, like, it's a license to sin, I would say, show me the empirical evidence that that's what's actually happening. Because my experience has been, when people believe and the Spirit brings them to life, something does happen. Now, does it mean it's automatic and the Spirit will force them to behave? No, but often we see that. And so to me, the evidence shows that that's not the case, even though it's kind of a straw man argument, but the evidence doesn't show that. So we've talked about Secure and Sure, which kind of takes care of some of the foundational things with assurance. But now I want to talk about The Road to Reward. What was the situation you're trying to help people with your writing of The Road to Reward?
Basically, what I was getting them to see is that we must have a robust doctrine of eternal rewards in order to have assurance. The Road to Reward I wrote in 2003, Secure and Sure 2005.
Yeah, okay.
And so they go hand in hand. Yeah. Ultimately, we need to see that salvation is not a reward. The first section of the book, the first three chapters are about that. And then I talk about who gets the rewards, on what basis, what the rewards are, and how should an understanding of rewards impact my life. And this was all influenced by Gospel Under Siege and Grace and Eclipse. The doctrine of eternal rewards is absolutely crucial to avoid thinking somehow we are having to work in order to obtain what they call final salvation or in order to obtain everlasting life.
Yeah, it seems to me that if you don't have the doctrine of rewards, it leaves this large open question. What about all these other verses that say things that are about, I mean, literally just rewards, but what do you do with those? And I think it might be that so many of the people that have gotten confused about the terms of the gospel, it's because they aren't even aware of this. I mean, I grew up in church and was in ministry, and I didn't hear people talking about rewards. It was a new concept to me when I, you know, heard it from you guys and others that are teaching like you. Why do you think that is? Why do you think it's so undertaught?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but if I had to pick a word, I'd say tradition. Unfortunately, most traditions, Roman Catholic, Eastern Orthodox, most Protestant traditions, certainly the cults, do not have a robust doctrine of eternal rewards. And so, in most cases, the reward is everlasting life.
Yeah,
you
right.
work hard so you can earn the prize, which is everlasting life or eternal salvation. And so, if you don't separate that out, you end up and come to these passages that are talking about working for something and earning something, and you get confused.
Yeah.
I remember reading a book called The Judgment Seat of Christ, something like a doctrine every Christian should know. It was from like 1890, and the author said, this is not well-known truth, but it should be.
Wow.
And I agree with that. Everybody should know about this teaching. This is one of the hallmarks of free grace theology.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so over 100 years, apparently, it's been undertaught and probably longer than that.
Right.
Well, these are great books, and we highly suggest that you get a copy of these. You can do that by going to faithalone.org. We'd like to say thank you for listening, and don't forget, believe in Jesus for life. Thank you, Bob Wilkin, for that great discussion. Would you like to deepen your understanding of Scripture and the Christian life? Well, a great place to start is our website. It's faithalone.org. That's faithalone.org. We've got all kinds of free materials on the site available for you. One of those, which is extremely popular, is our magazine, Grace in Focus. It comes out 6 times a year. It's full color, easy to read, and people are really growing who read it. So come and get a subscription at faithalone.org. We would like to thank all of our financial partners who help us keep this show going. All gifts are tax deductible and very much appreciated. If you'd like to find out how you can be a financial partner, visit us at faithalone.org. We are so happy when we hear from listeners just like you. Maybe you've got a question, comment, or feedback. If so, please send us a message. Here's our email address. It's radio@faithalone.org. That's radio@faithalone.org. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to talk about Absolutely Free and a Gospel of Doubt. So join us for that. I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society. And until next time, let's keep grace in focus.
The proceeding has been a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.